Bonjour, good afternoon, bienvenue. L'Assemblée générale annuelle 2007 de la Communauté électrochristique canadienne, CEC, welcome to the 2007 annual general meeting of the Canadian Electroacoustic on the web and live in Montreal and in various other places around the country and around the world. Quite widely advertised, and this, of course, will become part of someone's doctoral thesis in about 12 years' time when they see that once again the CEC has been living a decade ahead of the rest of the world in terms of communications, information processing, and getting things done. Yes, good afternoon. Today is Sunday, October. August. Living in the past. Well, on the way in today, I was saying to my on the way in this afternoon, I was thinking to myself, you know, by the time the 70s end, and I thought, no, that's not the 70s which are going to end. The 70s ended 30 years ago. By the time of the end of the first decade of the 21st century, many of the objectives of the CEC that were laid out some 23 years ago will have been met and will be flourishing, and others will be looking to the CEC in terms of... You're looking for the Department of Music. You're looking for the Department of Music. That's where the workshops are.
Yeah?
Yeah.
There's no concerts this afternoon?
Okay. Excuse me, we're having a few minor traffic problems here in the green room of Concordia University's Oscar Peterson Concert Hall. There seem to be a number of people looking for another event which is going on at the same time. So people are walking in and out. So the CEC has been ahead of the pack in many things. And when you're on the bleeding edge of things, you have two characteristics. One is you're on the edge, and the other one is you're bleeding. And with this afternoon's agenda of the annual general meeting, thank you very much, Jeff, is an example of the kind of bleeding edge things that the CEC has been promoting for a number of years and are now coming to fruition, or begin to come to fruition and begin to change many things. And some of the reports this afternoon will discuss initiatives and topics that have a history that goes back 5, 10, 20, and 30 years in terms of things. This afternoon... my name is Kevin Austin. I'm chairing this meeting, partly because there's nobody else to chair it immediately, and the other reason is that I just happen to be sitting in the middle of the table. We have a number of people in Montreal at the meeting, about half a dozen or a few more, and there may be a few more on the web, and there will be a few people who will listen to this later. In front of us on the web, there is a copy of the agenda for this meeting, and I would like to read the agenda to you, which is the l'ordre du jour. Approbation de l'ordre du jour, the adoption of the agenda. Two will be the approbation de procès-verbal de la dernière assemblée générale, the adoption of the minutes of the last general meeting. Three, sujet touchant le procès-verbal de la dernière assemblée générale, business arising from the minutes. Quatre, the rapport du président, the president's report. Five, rapport du conseil d'administration, the reports from the board. Six, other business. And seven, the levée de l'Assemblée. No calls for adjournment yet. I'm sorry, we haven't passed the agenda. We're not going to adjourn just quite yet. I therefore would ask for a motion to adopt the agenda as presented. You have to be a full member of the CEC to do this. Moved by Mark Corwin, seconded by Dominic Bazal. Discussion? Approved by general consensus. Two, the adoption of the minutes. The minutes to the last annual general meeting have been on the web for the past year. I think they were also... Are they attached here?
Yeah, they are here.
They are in...
The bottom of the first
They're
page.
On the bottom of the first page. I'd like you to very quickly look at the minutes from the last annual general assembly, the general meeting, AGM. And are there any questions or any comments about the minutes from the last AGM? These are somewhat informal meetings, but they're also very informative about a number of things that go on. Could I hear a motion for the adoption of the minutes from the last AGM, please? Dominic Bazal moves. And Yves Gigon seconds. Discussion? Correction? I will take general consensus for approval of this. Thank you very much. Three, business arising from the minutes. Many of the things which came up in the minutes from last time from the reports have, in fact, come to fruition. There were reports last time about the application for archiving projects and the idea of having mastering projects and a number of other things, the Times, the Jeux de Temps Times Play, and other initiatives, which many of them will be elaborated on this afternoon, as because last year at this time, or 13 months ago when the meeting took place, these were ideas which were the CEC was going to pursue. And subsequent to that meeting, in a number of things actually have taken place, and we'll have reports from a number of people involved in these projects. So I think is there business arising from the minutes at this point? Okay, so let's move on to number four, which is the President's Report.
You have it at the back.
You have a copy of that.
Yes.
Just see. Yes, there you go. This will be posted on the web in the form of the President's Report. Ian Stewart, who, just to give you a little context for this, the CEC has a board of directors, which is at the top of this, the president being Ian Stewart, the vice president, Laurie Radford, the treasurer, David Ogborn, the secretary, Jean Routier, member-at-large one, Kevin Austin, that's myself, and member-at-large two, Sean Pinchbeck. What is rather amazing about this, if you read down this list and you try and find these people, is that Ian Stewart is in London, as is London, UK, London, England, as is Laurie Radford. David Ogborn currently is in Toronto.
Florida.
He's in Florida.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I think right now he's back in Toronto at this point. Yeah, he's between Toronto and Florida, but he's in Toronto at the moment, at this moment. Jean Routier is in Vancouver. It's 3:15 or 3:30 here? To quelle heure?
Yeah, 3:18.
So 3:15. It's 3:15 in Montreal, making it 12:15 in Vancouver. Whoop, someone just had a little burp over there. That's our Skype calling us up. And in London right now, it is 8 o'clock in the evening, and where Jeff lives, it would be in Berlin, it would be 9 o'clock in the evening.
It would be.
Pardon?
It would be.
It would be.
But I'm here.
But Jeff is here, so it isn't 9 o'clock in the evening in Berlin. In fact, Jeff isn't.
David is in Florida.
David, you are in Florida. We set up a Skype. There's also a Skype connection, and David has just told us that he's in Florida enjoying a martini on the... Oh, wow, that's a neat picture, David. Thanks. almost there. It would be 9:15 in Berlin if Peter Castine is there. Are you there, Peter? Could you speak a little louder? No, he's not... Oh, that's a microphone? I thought it was a loudspeaker. Sean Pinchbeck, I don't know where Sean is these days. Are you back in Edmonton, Sean? Are you?
No, I think he's back in Lithuania.
Back in Lithuania. So he would be 1 or 2 hours ahead of Berlin, 15 years behind, but 2 hours ahead. Well, that's the old joke about Newfoundland. Set your back, your set your watches ahead half an hour and your mind back 15 years. So we are basically covering about 11 time zones in this meeting and within the board of directors and the administrators for the board. And Yves Gigon is here as well. So the CEC operates over the internet, and it operates The Skype contact name is Concordia-CEC. Is that right?
Yeah.
Thank you very much. I'm just getting word off the side here. So the CEC operates over an extremely wide range, internationally and nationally. The President, Ian Stewart, writes, the following report addresses CEC activities for the 2006-2007 fiscal year, as well as some activities underway in the current fiscal year, June 2007 through May 31, 2008. The past year has been an enormously successful one for the CEC. In particular, the CEC has had unprecedented success in obtaining funding for certain special initiatives detailed below, while continuing to improve its core activities, e-contact being one of the two largest contact points for the CEC and the outside world. CEC has published the further four editions of e-contact focusing on the 2007 Jeux de Temps Times Play project, electroacoustics in the prairies, hearing loss, and mastering in electroacoustics. While many design improvements have been implemented over the past 2 years, the scope and depth of content has been improved dramatically. This is due largely to the editorial commitment of Jeff Chippewa and to the invaluable contributions of the many members of our community who have written for the journal and the ongoing work of Yves Gigon. Sonus now contains over 2,000 EA works. The site is receiving nearly 10,000 unique visits per month and continues to receive positive feedback from listeners and educators. The EA archiving project, summarized below and a little later, will introduce to Sonus a wealth of Canadian EA works from the 50s through to the 80s, into the 90s, and some into the 2000s as well. But the period from the 70s to the 80s is a period which is currently significantly underrepresented in this collection. Sonus has at times experienced technical difficulties over the past year, and the CEC has continued to ensuring greater stability in the future. Jeux de Temps Times Play, what's interesting is that this is now the 20th year of the initiation of Jeux de Temps, but there was a hiatus of about 12 years when it didn't run. But this year, 46 young and emerging sonic artists contributed work to the Jeux de Temps Times Play, the largest number of Canadian submissions in the project's history, and nearly double the number from the 2006 edition. It's encouraging to hear such a high standard of work from a new generation of Canadian composers. I extend my congratulations to all participants, and particularly Dominic Thibault, who received the first prize from the jury for his work Nuit Noire, Nuit Grise. The project is documented in eContact 10.1, and the top awards will be available in the next edition of the Cache CD series, which will be Cache 2007. Funding. I'm especially pleased to report on the CEC's success over the past year in obtaining funding for a variety of special initiatives. Some of this will be presented in a little more detail shortly. The CEC received a project grant from the Creators Assistance Program of the Canada Music Fund, administered by the SOCAN Foundation, to fund a series of 8 educational seminars and concerts across Canada, led by Dominic Bazal, who is here today to speak about this, and Jean-Luc Louradour. These seminars will address sound quality, monitoring, and mastering in EA production. Each seminar will conclude with a concert of Canadian EA work. The seminars will run from October 17, 2007 to November 3, 2007. There's further information available through the CEC site. An application to the Langlois Foundation for a strategic grant for organizations to cover remaining costs in the seminar project was unsuccessful. The foundation indicated that the CEC had made a strong application that fell completely within the foundation's mandate, but all new funding for the remainder of 2007 and for all of 2008 has unfortunately been frozen. An application to the Canada Council's Audience and Marketing Development Travel Grant Program for the shipping, that's cargo costs, and travel costs of the seminars project was judged to not correspond well enough to the program mandate for it to be supported through this program. However, the officers who assessed our application felt it was a very strong project that deserves to be supported by the Canada Council and forwarded it to the music section to see about funding possibilities. At the time of this report, October 14th, a decision is pending. Heritage Canada, through its Canada Culture Online program, has provided a substantial grant, the largest in the CEC's history, for a project to restore the collection of historic Canadian EA works housed in the Concordia EA archive. These works, currently stored on decaying analog tape or other obsolete formats, will be transferred to digital format, and composer permissions will be sought to make as many of these works as possible available through Sonus. The project will also form the basis of e-learning educational modules about the historical development of Canadian EA, and the entire project will be documented in an upcoming special issue of eContact. Further information is available, again, through the CEC website. An application to the Canada Council's Supplementary Initiative for Funding, a promotional campaign for core CEC activities, was successful. The grant will be used to produce and distribute promotional materials for eContact and Sonus. Ian Stewart continues. In addition, the CEC continues to receive funding for its core projects. Unusually, the Cash 2005 CD project did not receive funding, but I am pleased to report that an application to the Canada Council for the Arts for Cash 2006 was successful, and Cash is again receiving financial support. eContact continues to receive funding from the Canada Council for the Arts publishing section at a level consistent with past years and is now funded through editions 11.4, Spring 2009. The CEC also continues to receive core funding from the SOCAN Foundation. The CEC wishes to thank all of the supporting organizations for the continuing support. Other projects and issues. CEC Treasurer David Ogborn served as the CEC's representative to the ISCM, the International Society for Contemporary Music, Canadian Section Jury. Frank Kustrup's electroacoustic work, Nasal Beat, was among the six works selected, as was Jean Routier's interactive installation, Index. David was also the key person in the coordination of the 2007 Toronto Electroacoustic Symposium, co-produced by the CEC, the Faculty of Music at the University of Toronto, with Dennis Patrick, and New Adventures in Sound Art. Composers and sound artists from Toronto, across Canada and the United States, and the UK discussed their work in paper presentations, and an evening concert gave the opportunity to the symposium participants and guests to perform electronic, live electronic, and improvised musics. I note with some concern there's been no new application to the CEC board this year. I consider it vital for the long-term sustainability of CEC activities to have some renewal among board positions, and particularly to involve younger Canadians in CEC activities. I intend to initiate discussions with the board about what the CEC can do, in addition to the Jeux de Temps Times Play project, to encourage the next generation of Canadian composers to become involved with CEC decision-making. With my very best wishes, I remain Ian Stewart, President of the CEC Board, Saturday, October 13, 2007, London, England. I'd like to thank Ian for his quite detailed summary of the activities. I know it took a little while to read through this, but I think it provides a strong background and context for much of what is going to be presented today, which is going to focus on aspects of the present ongoing activities of the CEC with regards to the major initiatives, funded initiatives which are taking place, and begin to lay a groundwork for some discussions about what the short term, next year or two, medium term, 2 to 5 years, and long term, 5 to 20 years, will begin to look like for the electroacoustic community in general. I will therefore present the President's report, and being a report, I would ask someone to move acceptance of the reading. Moved by Mark Corwin, seconded by Dominic Bazal. I see no major disapproval. Adopted by consensus. The next item is reports from the board. These reports from the board have traditionally been posted on the web to be read at people's leisure, and a very brief summary has been presented at this time. The reason for this being that by and large, the reports are important to have, but the time of having people together is probably best spent with having people do things that people do best when they're together, which is drink coffee and dip their madeleines into their cup of tea. And it's, as Marcel Proust found out in Book 7, the way to find your true path in life is to walk down a sidewalk broken and just have your foot fall into the gutter and realize you should become a writer. That is my 30-second summary of À la recherche du temps perdu, by the way.
Pretty much sums it up.
People who only read Book 1 talk about the Madeleine and the tea, but if you got to Book 6, Book 7, you realize that the truth is he stumbled into the gutter. Good. Thank you. We have approbation for the having cleared up the we finally solved À la recherche du temps perdu. Now we can put Marcel to sleep for a while and get on to other things in life. Reports from the board. Do we have the treasurer's report? David, are you here? I think if
each
David.
Layer, right?
Yeah. And David Ogborn, who is currently sitting on the beach in Florida. David, would you care to do? We have about a 1 second delay on this line. Oh. We're not only getting 1 second delay, we're getting multiple echoes. Hey, this is neat. We could do an EA piece. We're okay? This is a tape loop. Yes. I'm going to pass this over to David.
Are you getting echoes of yourself or just of me?
I always get echoes of myself.
Should be fine from his end.
It's fine, Dave.
You can.
Yeah. Must be Florida's a different time zone, isn't it?
Florida's a different time zone, yeah.
Okay, I'm just going to start talking then.
Good.
And hope that it's all working.
It's fine, yes.
I don't have a big report to deliver. It's just a couple of things I think I wanted to say that weren't mentioned in the president's report. One is to note that in the budget that's been presented to the meeting, or that is going to be presented to the meeting for the coming year, the CEC between funding from outside sources and in-kind contributions is overseeing projects to the tune of $450,000. And about half of that comes from in-kind contributions, and so I think that's a pretty good indication of the scope of the CEC's activities, their importance, and also the willingness of diverse elements of the community, different friendly institutions and individuals to contribute to CEC initiatives. Also, with this huge budget, it's entirely balanced, which is a testament to Jeff and E's excellent stewardship of our activities. So I would give a special thanks to Jeff and E. And that's what I have to say.
Thank you very much, David. For those who are online and haven't quite been able to get to the online version of the files, what I will say, I will just read very briefly the important features of the budget, apart from the two large ongoing projects, which are actually single projects for the year. This is an audited statement, right?
Yes.
Yes, being
the accountant.
The accountant has audited this, and
I have the operational budget here.
And okay, will you speak about it?
I can speak about this. The main difference essentially is that this is when he spoke of the $463,000
mm-hmm.
operational budget. That's for the coming year. So
yeah.
That includes the major archive project,
mm-hmm.
which we'll be talking about later.
Okay.
And so what you have in your hands here is essentially the accountant's budget.
Yep.
So this is the cash
year.
Flow that went through last year, 2006 to 2007,
fine.
Before we had started the seminar project and the archive project.
Okay. So I will move to adopt... To accept the audited financial statement for the CEC for the year, fiscal year June 1st, 2006 to May 31, 2007. Revenues income were $32,245, including $17,600 from the Conseil des Arts. These are rounded figures. $450 from CD sales. SOCAN Foundation, $5,000. Membership, $7,800. Miscellaneous, about $1,350. Expenses were $26,040. Salaries, $18,000. Production publications, $4,500. Administration costs, just over $2,000. Professional fees, banking fees, software, hardware, $1,100 and change. Total, $26,050. The revenues exceeded expenses by $6,201. Aha. So we have a $6,000 surplus from last year.
Yeah,
the board is meeting in Florida next week, by the way.
And it's explained by...
It's okay, don't worry. Okay. We'll work this out offline. That's okay.
Fine.
Even I have signing power on this account. Sorry, Jeff. La vie est dure. That is the account from last year, so that it is a $6,000 surplus. Well, I mean,
not exactly,
because the money gets carried over from year to year as well. Could I have a move to accept the report as presented? Mark Corwin.
Seconded by David Osborne.
Actually, it should be moved by David Osborne, actually, I guess. David, will you move the acceptance, please? I hear you, but I don't hear the voice. Yes, he's coming up. David, put down the martini. Open the door, Hal. Sorry, I can't do that, Dave.
Okay.
Okay, moved by David Osborne, seconded by Mark Corwin. Discussion?
Question, discussion?
Okay, yeah, I'll apologize. I have to do it verbally. If I have to do it acoustically, I suppose it makes sense.
No, that's okay.
Not electroacoustically.
we know you're in the pod out there, Dave. I'm sorry, this is too important to entrust to human beings. Open the door, Hal. Okay, we have the motion and the seconder as a discussion. I think any questions can come up an ongoing discussion. Are there any objections or problems with this? Thank you. Accepted by consensus. Thank you. Let's move on to the next report. So the president has spoken, the vice president has remained quiet, the treasurer has presented his report, the secretary Jean Routier has sent nothing at the moment. Member at large, I think we'll defer the other comments on the board reports to the people presenting about the major projects which are ongoing. That's R2-D2. Oh, hi, R2. Nice to see you here. There's the projected... do we have the budget for this year?
Yeah, Jeff.
I have it here.
Okay.
Page 3 is the expenses.
Okay. The projected budget for this coming year, 2007-2008, the current fiscal year, is based upon, as was mentioned before, the inclusion of in-kind expenses. A number of years ago, the CEC began to move to doing a complete and correct budget, which included in-kind and services, which it did that so that it was clear to know exactly what the real costs of the association were, not those that were hidden away and absorbed by various kinds of associations. For example, certain universities absorb certain costs related to the operation of the CEC, and they were not represented, so that when funding applications were being made to bodies, they were looking and they'd say, well, you're not a very big organization, you only have an operating budget of $22,000? And the answer to that really is that, well, we're very lean and we're slim and lean and tough. But in fact, there's a lot more going on than that because many, many people and organizations contribute in various ways. So by and large, the budget this year, the bottom line, as you can see from looking at the web statement, is somewhere around the order of $450,000, $460,000 in this. The including the projects which will be discussed later. The budget is on the website. Is it posted?
This one, no.
No, the upcoming one isn't posted. The projected total expenses are $463,085, and the clean, lean, dynamically 21st century management style of Jeff and Eve project total revenues of $463,086, leaving a surplus of $1. But when you take the revenues from the expenses, for some reason it comes up to zero. So I think we need to have this document checked.
It's the figures are rounded off.
Oh, the figures are rounded. Ah, so rounding error.
Well, to the dollar.
Yes. It's the dither. It's the dither that has changed the shape of this budget. So it actually worked out to being about... It's a balanced budget. There's no projection for a deficit or a surplus. But in fact, it is a budget which shows an extreme surplus. And the surplus is that there's enormous value added to the national and international electroacoustic community by these two major ongoing projects. For the moment, I will present that, and I will defer this until a later time, since the board hasn't had a specific occasion to look at this just yet, and we'll come back with a supplementary version of this at a later point during the year. Moving on, are there other reports from the board?
No.
I don't think anyone is saying there are. I'd like to thank the members of the CEC board. Just a note about the board of the CEC. It's open for contributions by many people. And the charter of the CEC does not require that board members be members of the CEC. This was partly due to the idea that a board is strengthened by having connections into a community without necessarily having to be internally coherent about what it's trying to do. And to extend this idea, the CEC board meets online. It actually is an email list that it has the six elected members or acclaimed members of the board, and there are about a dozen other people who are sitting on this email list from the UK, Australia, the United States, Scotland, various other places, who not only contribute to the board discussions from time to time, but also carry this information back to other national organizations around the world. And I think this makes the board of the CEC very strong in both the national and the international communities, because the discussions which take place at the level of the board involve people from other countries, and they just carry information backwards and forwards. So the community aspect of this ceases to be a national event. It becomes quite a wide-ranging international forum for discussion and ideas. And I'd like to thank the board for their work on this, and I'm sure that Ian is doing the same at this time. Is there other business at this moment before we get on to the report on the major projects? Are there other questions that might come up under other business? Well, at this point, I think I'll hand the meeting over to Yves Gigon and Jeff Chippewa to discuss the two major projects, and maybe Dominic Bazal could speak a little about the mastering project, which is moving forward as well from the technical level, and some of the major initiatives which this represents for the community.
I'll give a report on the seminars project, which is about to get underway this week, starting on the 17th here at Concordia. Dominique Bassal Jean-Luc Leroudeau will be giving seminars, all-day-long seminars, at 8 different institutions across Canada, from starting in Montreal, 3 institutions here, so Concordia, Université de Montréal, McGill, then onwards to the University of Calgary, University of Manitoba in Winnipeg, OCAD, the Ontario College of Art and Design in Toronto, Dalhousie in Halifax, also with the participation of Mount Allison and Acadia. I did forget Banff, the Banff Center, right, after Calgary, so Montreal, Calgary, the Banff Center, and then onwards to Winnipeg, Halifax, and back to Montreal. Mm-hmm. So they go from the 17th of October, it's the launching, to the 3rd of November, the final date in Halifax. There will be 3 sessions during the day, which...
Could Dominic speak about that?
Dominic could probably help us out here with the presentation of this. If you want to... So Dominique will be giving, they'll be sharing with Jean-Luc Leroudeau the various sessions, so each the 3 sort of larger blocks that will be given during the day, using a setup with equipment on loan to us from Sennheiser Canada. So what David Ogborn had mentioned earlier about the in-kind contributions, we have not only the support of the SOCAN Foundation for this project, we also have Sennheiser Canada providing essentially the entire main system that we're going to be using for the presentations and for the concerts in the evening following the seminars. So they've provided that as a form of sponsorship to the project. The Canadian Music Centre is providing some assistance in simply contacts in their own network of people that they're in contact with. And in Montreal, Toronto, and in Halifax, the CMC is also providing a light lunch during the seminars. The CMC in Calgary would have also participated, but the entire staff is out of town for those days for national meetings. So there will be the seminars during the day. In the evening, concerts using the same setup. And on the content of the seminars, I'll let Dominique explain a bit about that. The 3 sessions will be shared according to the content, according to the nature of each of the seminars by Dominique and Jean-Luc. Going back and forth in the presentation of the different of the content of the different seminars.
On peut parler en français? Quelqu'un va traduire? Ok. Alors, le matin, on va présenter une série d'œuvres. Je pense que j'ai la voix assez forte pour me permettre de... Non? D'accord. Parce que j'aime te regarder en parlant, c'est pour ça que... Donc, le matin, on va présenter une série d'œuvres électroacoustiques et des extraits d'œuvres électroacoustiques comparés à des productions pop pour montrer la différence de niveau de production. On va aussi, après ça, passer à Jean-Luc Leroudeau qui va nous faire une démonstration de problèmes d'exportabilité. Ensuite, on va passer à des problèmes de mastering particuliers, c'est-à-dire qu'on va essayer de démontrer... ce qui se fait en mastering stéréo pour tenter de déjouer le problème de l'exportabilité. Durant l'après-midi, on va parler de sources. Un des problèmes de production, c'est le choix des sources. On va essayer d'expliquer autant par des exemples que par la transmission d'un certain nombre de critères comment choisir des sources de façon à ce que les problèmes de mixage et d'exportabilité soient minimisés. À ce moment-là, je repasse le micro à Jean-Luc Leroudeau qui va nous parler de médium d'exportation. Il va présenter le système que nous utilisons en expliquant toutes sortes de détails, comment à chaque endroit le système va avoir été calibré. Et ensuite, je termine avec une dernière session de démonstration de mastering, mais cette fois-ci en 5.1, sur des pièces complètes. Voilà. Le soir, il y a un concert avec quatre pièces qui ont toutes été masterisées, des pièces en 5.1 que j'estime qu'ils sont arrivés à un certain point de maîtrise technique et de qualité sonore. Après, on va se coucher.
Are you going to do a translation? Jeff will just do a quick translation.
So in the morning there's a presentation, a comparison session, where selected works from the pop and EA milieu will be compared with each other to look at the differences in sound quality, which are typified in these different milieu. Afterwards, it's Jean-Luc that will present some information on problems of exportability, followed by, again, Dominique Vassal presenting problems of mastering. This is in stereo. Dealing with typical problems encountered in the mastering of electroacoustics in its current state today. In the afternoon session, there is a look at the problems of source materials, the choice of materials, and looking at ways of minimalizing problems in the mixing stages, followed by another session by Jean-Luc, where he looks at the issues of the medium of the exportation mediums and the systems of diffusion that are used. The final seminar session in the afternoon is done in 5.1, and Dominique will be looking at entire pieces, the mastering of entire pieces, and sort of a workshop presentation of what happens, using examples, what happens in the process of mastering, explaining the different issues that come up in the process. All of these are supported also by, should be pointed out, the main reading for these seminars, which we've insisted on the students reading for these and anybody who's participating in. It's open to the general public. It's not just the students, and we've had interest from the general public, from different institutions as well, to participate in the seminars or at least to watch them, come in and be present during them. The main readings are eContact 9.3, for which Dominique Vassal was the guest editor, mastering in electroacoustics. And a lot of the information, a lot of base information in that issue, which provide the background for the seminars that he'll be giving. So it's highly suggested reading material. Really helps sort of contextualize everything that they'll be dealing with in the sessions. In the evening, there will be a concert of selected pieces which were mastered in 5.1, the majority of which, I believe, if I saw the last selection from the concert, the majority of them are Canadian works.
No, but
they're all available.
They're all. Toutes les œuvres sont publiées par Empreinte Digitale, qui est une étiquette canadienne. Mais si je ne m'abuse, il n'y a qu'une œuvre canadienne.
Okay, but these are works that Dominique has selected, which will effectively illustrate some of the issues that have arisen and been addressed during the day.
Ouais, en fait, le concert, c'est plutôt comme une note d'encouragement pour montrer qu'on peut parfois faire du bon son au cas où les gens aient envie de se suicider à la fin de la journée.
Okay. I need to translate that, do I?
No, that's cultural. It's only the French who can feel that kind of sense.
That kind of pain.
The English are immune to it. They don't have that chromosomal structure that allows them to
more resistant. Deeply.
Yeah, that's why they have James Joyce and not Marcel Proust. And Shakespeare and not Molière. Okay, thank you. I'd like to thank you both for that. I think a little context for how this came about is also useful, because none of this ever comes up in a vacuum. Nothing ever.
Je veux dire une chose que j'étais en train d'oublier. C'est un concert, mais c'est aussi un concert explicatif. C'est un concert sur la qualité audio.
Mm-hmm.
Donc je vais faire des petits commentaires entre les pièces.
It's a conference presentation.
C'est ça. Yeah. C'est pas vraiment
commented,
un concert.
Commented concert.
Yeah.
Concert commenté.
Mm. That's Harvest Moon. I did the same. I spoke 10 minutes before each piece and pointed things out and played. Will you be playing excerpts before you play the piece?
Non.
Possibly.
Je simplement les pièces, mais j'explique ce qu'il faudrait comme écouter.
You may.
Et c'est toujours sur la qualité audio seulement. On ne parle pas ni de structure ni d'esthétique.
You may actually find that playing a little bit of the piece beforehand helps you.
Ben, j'imagine qu'on va avoir fait ça durant tout le séminaire, toute la journée. Yeah.
But you may have other people in the evening who aren't there during the day.
Ah, just
you'll think about it.
D'accord.
The history of this is that about 5-6 years ago, Dominic Bazal contacted me and said, you know, the main problem with electroacoustics, it sucks. I said, what do you mean it sucks? And he said, the sound quality is 1970s. It sounds like these people are working on Revox tape recorders at 7.5 IPS with magnetized razor blades. There's and there's distortion. And I said, well, what do you want to do about this? He said, well, why can't electroacoustic composers learn how to make good sound? And I said, well, what do you have in mind? So he proposed to write a small article on his experience within the pop music field and bringing the techniques and technologies that had been developed by electronic music composers in the 50s and the early 60s and recording people, and then exporting them back into the field of EA. And over the past 5 years, Dominic has worked ceaselessly on the promotion of this idea. And I think it's not unfair to say that the initial reception to this was less than lukewarm. People were saying, but I'm a composer. I don't need someone to come and fix my sound because I'm an electroacoustic composer. And initially,
we still have that today.
And initially, Dominic's response to this was, well, let's go out there and shake them down. I said, Dominic, I think what we need to do is we need to do a little foundational work. We need to build a little base before we get on our horses and ride off. The first thing to have would be nice to have a horse. It would be nice to have a saddle and have some shoes on this horse. So Dominic has worked over the past 5 years in building this entire structure and bringing this forward as an important point. And not in a combative way of a critical way. He's just saying that your electroacoustic composers, Beethoven could write a string quartet. You should be able to produce high-quality stems at 2496 or 3296 and be able to hear the difference between high-quality and not acceptable quality all the way through the chain. And this is a long, slow, uphill battle because part of the culture is that we're the artist, I'm the artist, I don't need an editor. If you're a writer, it's standard practice to have an editor come in and read your writing and say, you know, that chapter is one-third too long, and your vocabulary is not very good, and the writer goes back and they rework it. And if necessary, the editor makes suggestions as to the improvement of the quality of the writing. And this is an understood feature. The individual writer doesn't lose anything by having someone who does nothing but edit work with them. And the electroacoustic composer, as is slowly coming to be shown by Dominic's work, will be sending Dominic stems of various kinds and saying, this is what I want, this is what I have, can you help with this? And he goes through and he will, as he will cover in the seminars, do the mastering and show this. And this is a cultural shift within the electroacoustic community, which Dominic has spearheaded, and being the point of the spear is not the best place to be in a battle. But he has championed this, and it's moving forward. And for those of you who are able to, get to the seminars, and those who are not, be sure and read the articles in eContact. And I'd like to thank Dominic publicly here for his work over the past 5 years and clearly his ongoing work and support in this endeavor over the next 5 or 10, 15 years to bring up the level and the standards for electroacoustic composers to be able to produce pieces of the quality of what one hears when one goes into a cinema and listens to Lord of the Rings or Harry Potter. This is sound design at a very high level, and this is what people just expect to hear. Composers have to have the capacity to produce sounds at that quality if they intend to be heard in today's world. Thank you very much.
Good.
Okay, I think we're going to move on to the next. Are there any questions? We'll move on to maybe some questions will come up on from the Skype or the web. Let's move on to the what is referred to as CAP, but actually has a correct title.
The CC/Concordia Archive Project.
Archive Project, yeah. Which is about the recovery or the documentation digitization.
Well, if you speak about the funding base, and I'll talk about the virtual.
Okay.
je vais parler en français. Oui, nous avons reçu une grosse bourse de pour faire un projet.
This is Yves Gigon speaking.
Okay. Attends, il faut que je prenne la forme ici. Bon, nous avons fait une application pour la troisième fois, en fait, pour le même projet. Et cette fois-ci, nous avons réussi à obtenir une bourse pour archiver, en fait, numériser et faire du travail sur la collection d'archives qui se trouve à Concordia. Donc, ça fait effectivement depuis 3 ou même 4 ans que nous travaillons sur le projet. Cette fois-ci, nous avons été acceptés. Donc c'est effectivement la plus grosse bourse que la CEC a jamais reçue. C'est des gros montants. On parle de $135,000 de bourse. C'est un projet avec un budget d'à peu près $270,000. Donc c'est assez gros. Et c'est le problème que nous avons, en fait. C'est pas tellement un problème, mais une des difficultés du projet, c'est le deadline qu'on nous a imposé. Normalement, c'est un projet qui doit durer une année. Le problème que nous avons eu, c'est que nous avons commencé 3 mois en retard et nous ont donné la réponse 3 mois en retard. Alors, il faut un peu qu'on mette les bouchées doubles pour récupérer le temps perdu. Et bon, le projet est en route, forcément, depuis un certain temps. Il y a déjà une bonne partie de la collection qui a été cataloguée dans une base de données, qui était déjà cataloguée, en fait, par Jean-François Denis il y a quelques années. Mais nous avons continué le travail. En ce moment, nous avons à peu près 3100 pièces qui sont cataloguées. Il y a d'autres équipes qui travaillent en même temps que le catalogage. Il y a Dominique Bassal qui a commencé de numériser certaines bandes analogiques. Il y a une autre équipe à Concordia qui s'occupe de tout ce qui est date, certaines cassettes audio, une bonne collection partie de cassettes. Il y a LPs aussi, des 33 tours. Donc c'est sûr que le catalogage était une des premières choses que nous devions faire pour que la collection soit complètement connue, pour qu'on puisse se rendre compte de l'étendue de la collection. Et cette première partie est presque terminée. Bon, il reste encore quelques bancs de problèmes qu'il va falloir importer dans la base de données. Mais nous en sommes à peu près à la fin de cette partie-là, de ce travail-là. L'autre étape, c'est effectivement de numériser les bandes et de contacter les compositeurs pour avoir l'autorisation pour utiliser les pièces dans le projet. Ça va être un gros travail aussi, parce qu'il y a certains compositeurs qu'il va falloir retrouver. Il y a des pièces qui datent des années 70, 60 même. Donc il va falloir trouver les adresses e-mail. Nous avons déjà commencé ce travail aussi. C'est un gros travail de contact, d'obtenir de nouvelles informations sur ces compositeurs, leur bio, leur note de programme, des choses comme ça, pour les pièces dont nous n'avons pas encore l'information. Une autre partie du projet consiste à faire 10 modules en ligne sur la collection, parlant de certains aspects techniques. Au courant des années où la collection a existé, et aussi à propos de l'histoire de l'électroacoustique au Canada, donc toujours en rapport avec la collection de Concordia. Ces 10 modules en ligne vont être sur Internet, sur le web, et nous avons créé une équipe de spécialistes. Nous avons trouvé une équipe de spécialistes qui s'occupe de cette partie-là du projet. Nous en sommes encore en train de chercher des auteurs pour écrire le contenu de ces modules. Donc nous avons déjà trouvé certaines personnes, dont Hélène Prévost qui est avec nous aujourd'hui. Il y a une autre personne qui s'appelle Mario Gauthier qui va faire partie du projet. Mais nous sommes encore en train de chercher d'autres auteurs pour cette partie-là. Peut-être que je pourrais demander à Kevin d'expliquer un peu la collection, puisqu'il la connaît bien. C'est lui qui l'a carrément créée, qui l'a assemblée, qui l'a présentée au public. Je ne sais pas s'il peut en parler un peu.
Thank you, Eve. a little history of this. The idea for this archive goes back, like many things, more than 35 years. The idea was in 1971, well before the internet was even a twinkle. How is it possible to get electroacoustic works distributed and made known to other people if they just sit in a closet somewhere, like at McGill, which is where they sat in there? And the students who were in the studio had access to these pieces, but otherwise they weren't there. In the late 70s, here at Concordia, we began to do many, many concerts, something at this point in time on the order of about close to 400 concerts over the past 25 to 30 years. And initially, I would send out letters to people saying, if you have a piece, we would like to play it. And sometimes pieces came in, sometimes pieces didn't come in, and we just played concerts and continued to encourage that. And the pieces would come in, I would just put them into boxes, and they would be stacked up on shelves. And slowly, over the space of 25, 30 years, this collection began to become significant in size. At the time that ECREC was shifting from being the association for the Printemps d'Acoustique to being a different kind of association, many of the tapes that they had were going into limbo, and I happened to be in the ECREC office one day when Alain Thibault was helping sorting some things out, and I said to him, all of those tapes, what's happening to them? He said, nothing. Do you want them? And I said, yeah, I'll take them. And so we acquired about 6 or 8 boxes or 10 boxes of works that ECREC had acquired over the previous 5-10 years of the Printemps électroacoustique from the 80s, and some of their competitions and some of their other things. And so this completely uncatalogued collection of tapes, a few of which actually didn't have names attached to them because they were from competitions, and the composers had been eradicated from the box. All we have was the title of the piece. And so there's going to be an interesting little search going on for, did you compose a piece called I Flush the Toilet in 1981? and if you did, could you please identify the first 4 seconds so we can give you the credit for this piece? It begins like this. Good. So
I don't think I've ever heard that piece before.
You don't think you've ever heard that piece? I heard about 400 of them in the 1970s. The toilet flush was one of the most popular sounds among...
Before snow came.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a very popular sound among the early days of music concrete composers who worked in their own apartments or in their own homes with a tape recorder. Let me find a sound that no one else is going to have. Oh, I can flush the toilet. So they either had an S or they would flush the toilet. So this collection slowly grew. Oh, I think David just flushed the toilet in Florida. The collection grew, and in the mid-80s, Jean-François Denis, who was at Concord at the time, and I started to consider what to do about this, and he said, well, we have a thing called a computer. And I said, a what? And he said, look at this little box. And it had a 9-inch screen. And he said, we can do a database. I said, we? He said, we! And I said, good. You said yes. It's all yours. It's one of the advantages of being bilingual in these situations, that you can always twist other people's words to one's advantage. However, he began this and eventually published 2 books, one called Q and the other one called Q Resonance Addendum. And in these were the printed versions of the database at the time. The first one has about 600 or 700 pieces listed, of which about 200 were actually improvisations that had been performed in concerts, some of which had been documented at the time, and a large number of which were simply titles of pieces which had been improvisations. So the collection began to grow and began to get documentation. In the late 80s, following his lead, I carried my Macintosh computer out to Toronto and databased the UTEMS collection, the University of Toronto collection, and got a copy of the Warsaw Radio Studio file cards and databased that, and got a copy of the Columbia Princeton file cards and databased that as well, and McGill. And since that time, some of these collections have become defunct, some are lost, who knows where they are. But through this collection of materials, one can begin to draw up a sense of what it was to be an electroacoustic composer or a sound artist through the 70s and the 80s and into the early 90s. And this collection grew, but it was on quarter-inch tape, and the problems of quarter-inch tape are well known. As we get into the late 80s and early 90s, we begin finding DATs coming in, and then we begin finding CDs coming into the collection. And then we begin getting distribution systems such as Sonus that allow for the works to not have to reside in one place, in one physical space. And over the past couple of years, a number of people have been saying, you know, it's time to get this collection into a wider, present a wider perspective of what has happened over the years in the field. And about 70% of the composers who were active between 1977 and the late 80s are no longer particularly active in electroacoustic composition. They may be in teaching, they may have left the field entirely. And so part of the major aspect of this is to get to the composers, or in a number of cases I know of, to the estates of the composers since they've died, and get permission for the works to be documented and placed into this. This is the collection of works range all the way from the composer who spent 4 hours to do a 3-minute piece to the composer who spent 7 months to do a 4-minute piece. So there's an enormously wide range of work which is in the collection. There's a small representation of live electronics at the time, if it's possible to make connection with the two or three other major live electronics institutions in Canada, including the Canadian Electronics Ensemble in Toronto, and the enormous archive of live material from the Music Gallery. It would be possible to begin to get a really quite complete picture of what happened in EA in Canada between the very early 70s up to the late 90s, and after the late 90s and the mid-90s, it becomes clearer that the digital technologies have taken over, and we need to find a way of collecting the resources together and being able to present them into... It's a matter of information management from the late mid-90s rather than the collection of materials. And these are some of the issues which the CAP project is starting to deal with and to work upon. Another issue which I would encourage people who are involved to think about is that we all had sins in our youth, and some of us would like to... Some of us still have sins in our old age, but that was Rossini. I'd like to encourage people who did pieces many years ago to look at them as saying this is part of a general cultural context. And while I may not like what I did in 1977 or 1984, and I would like to suppress this work, there are other kinds of values in place here. And we would like to keep copies, sometimes even two or three revisions of the same piece, and works which one may not be entirely happy with looking back 20 years later and saying, well, you know, that wasn't so good. But there's an important cultural aspect to this, and an important aspect of history and heritage, which is important to have, and it's important to have available. And as composers get older, they sometimes look back and want to suppress works of their youth. But on the other side of that, there are values to having this information available to other people to come back and to look and see what happens in the development of human life from the point of view of the exuberance and energy of youth to the kind of slowing down, the maturation and the compression of ideas which occur to composers and artists later in their life. It's an enormous project. It's given me an opportunity to go back through effectively about 60 boxes of material and sort things out. And I'd like to thank the board of the CEC, who's been standing behind this for the past 4 years in promoting this, to Eve and Jeff and a number, 5, 6, 7 other people who have all contributed to this in small and large ways in making this possible to happen. And also as a way of laying out... In an international sense, a kind of a blueprint, a roadmap for what can be done in other places with other composers for other countries, and the continuing support of the CEC and the community at large for this.
Thank you. Okay.
We have Jean-François Denis online. Is he on Skype?
He is.
Jean-François, welcome. Salut, bonhomme.
He's chatting?
Are you?
He'll let us know if he wants to speak.
Okay.
He will let us know if he wants to speak?
I just want to let you know he's there.
Oh, he wants to let us know. Jean-François?
I'm a little.
Hello?
Hello.
Oh.
He said hello.
He said hello. Okay. That's with C-3PO. Hello.
Technology is amazing.
Technology is amazing. It sounds just like it sounded like in 2000. No, in Star Wars, right? C-3PO? Is
yeah.
that Star Wars?
Yeah.
Bleep. Sounds like a mini Moog. Do we have any questions at this point about things or any comments? There seems to be no comments or questions about things. Are there other things that people would like to mention or bring up?
No,
Monsieur Bazal? Hélène? No, we're fine. Timothy?
Any other questions from people on Skype?
Any questions from people on Skype? The eventual aim of the project, looking ahead 5 years, is that as many of these works as possible will be available on Sonus or whatever is there in place of Sonus, and the database will be part of a larger database of electroacoustic works so that interested people and scholars and historians and just general audience can come and can listen to these pieces. Some of the challenges for the production team in general will be to move these up to an acceptable, when the bandwidth is available, to have them at 44.1 or some equivalent rather than in MP3 format. And also the more general issue that about 100 or 150 of the pieces are in multi-channel format, anywhere from 4 to 8 and 12 channels. And one of the challenges the CEC is quite prepared to deal with through Sonus and the extensions of Sonus is to find ways of having these available as 4, 6, 8, and 10, and 10.1 files. The other part of this, which is another, again, a bandwidth issue, is that there are about 20 or 30 multimedia pieces which have visual components to them, and at some point it would be nice to be able to have them available with the audio-visual component.
It's already possible.
It's possible, but it hasn't been done as yet. An extension of this is a more general connection into the education community. For a long time, the idea has been to have a database which is not simply a flat database, but has value added to it. And this is that a person would be able to type in the word whoosh, 1987, and they'll be able to find pieces from the database that contain the sound whoosh.
That's my piece, actually.
That's Jeff's piece, when whoosh, that was his toilet flushing in 1987. Whoosh. Fun?
That was mine.
That was, no, okay. We're having tofu, firm tofu at dawn between the two of them. They will fight this out, throwing pieces of tofu at each other. So that what it begins to be required are scholars of a sort who are going to be able to listen to the work and do what Schenker did, basically, for tonality, which is define a model that somehow is able to summarize and provide an intellectual model for what it was to be an electroacoustic composer sometime between 1947 and the year 2010. And this will be a searchable database that the student would type in the word and the audio files which are in the database will have been marked by somebody to say, oh, listen to this, this is blah, 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 or they'll type in backwards metro and they will turn up with
500 hits.
500 hits, among them being Gilles Gobet, right? Where you listen to pieces and you find the sound of the backwards metro in there, or you find machine sound, you type in repetitive clicking and you find the pieces with that, or you type in the word sneeze and you find pieces with sneezes in them, and you can trace through that. And that's the intellectual overlay, that's the artistic conceptual overlay which is buried inside the idea of behind Sonus, and also behind the idea of e-contact, that what e-contact is just a single surface representation of a broader intellectual structure that allows people multiple access into information and into ideas which have come up over the within the artistic and within the cultural communities. But that's a paper which is has yet to be written.
Ah oui, j'ai oublié de mentionner que le projet est subventionné par Patrimoine Canada. Ça, je sais pas s'il y a d'autres choses à ajouter.
And the information on this will be. Is it is anything up on the site yet?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay.
Can you just mention where to find it?
cec.concordia.ca/education/archive.
One thing which I forgot to mention earlier was an initiative that Jeff started a year ago, the wikis, or a year and a half ago, a year and a half ago. Jeff looked around and said, you know, we should make this e-contact much more alive. And so he started putting up wikis. Can you say a few things about what they are?
Well, the thing about the problem with the website is that it's essentially, in most cases, fixed content when you're dealing with articles. A journal, for example, the structure is typically very fixed, and so some of the stuff that what happens with journals online is that things become obsolete or information becomes obsolete. And so by using the wikis, which are they're collaborative, they're a way of working in collaboration on the internet. So you have a site, an area in the site where whoever has access to that site can edit the material, and so you can also define different levels of access and this sort of thing. So we developed a few, for example, for the issue on education. Was the first one we did for it was the education issue, mm-hmm. 8.4. Yeah. And so there was one. We used it essentially to develop the content. So we had contributors going in and adding information to the sites. Like there was a list of films that had some form of electroacoustic content. There was a bibliography, sort of a basic bibliography, a fundamental bibliography for electroacoustic music. And so it was possible for a number of authors in a number of different places to contribute to it, to add to it. And what we did initially was get it to a point where we thought that it was complete enough, and we hardwired it. And in some ways, that's an error, I think, with those ones, because there are some things that are going to change over time. There's going to be new references that come out that need to be added to the thing. And so there's a question of resources that comes into play, where old pages from 5 years ago or 10 years ago, for example, may have to be re-edited. That's an administrative issue in any organization. How much time can be spent on old pages? And we have so many more pages every year. How much resources do we have to set aside for these sort of things? So the wikis can be used as a live, an alive form of content that can be continually edited, not just by the people in the CEC, but also by the members of the community. So there's also the fact that there's a much more intimate contact with the community who's actually contributing to the journal that they're reading as well for some of the pages. Obviously, for some things, for some articles, it's really fixed content, and they'll always be coded that way. But for some kinds of information, it's very good to have it open so that we can continually change it and have different contributors. Things like, for example, one that I started up that has to be developed a bit more is there was a page that I set up based on a bunch of posts to one of the lists on various plugins that were available. So I just took everything that everybody had said, asked for their permission to use it in it, since they hadn't contributed directly, mm-hmm. and put up a page for VST plugins that has just a basic summary of what the plugin does. And so it's a reference that everybody has, instead of what's happened up until now, is that people share information with their friends and the community that they're in, and the same information is being shared in all these different communities. And if you can bring it up one level to where it's available for everybody else, it can become a much more efficient resource and a much more lively resource and a much much greater contribution.
Ça pose quelques problèmes avec les subventionneurs des fois, mais on pousse un peu les limites.
I don't think we thought that there might be problems with the fact that we need to provide some sort of fixed content. For example, for eContact, which is largely funded by the Canada Council Writing and Publishing section, but it doesn't. I mean, we have enough. There's enough content. Okay. There's new content generated each year, and I don't think it's really that much different from having me as the person who gathers all this information from one person and compiles it into one page. We're just opening it up a bit more. The same information is being provided. It's being much more efficient. So we'll continue to use these wiki pages for.
Avoir un éclairage sur l'interaction entre les différentes parties du projet d'archivage. Il y a le fond, qui sont les œuvres. Il y a le projet de e-learning. Et il y a tout le travail de numérisation. Je pense que je comprends, mais j'aimerais avoir dans vos mots un éclairage sur comment les modules s'imbriquent les uns dans les autres.
Tous les modules e-learning sont en fait pour donner un éclairage de la collection. Pour éclairer la collection, en fait, un peu expliquer l'historique de la collection, comment on peut donner des exemples aussi de par rapport à l'histoire canadienne de l'électroacoustique, qu'est-ce qu'on retrouve dans la collection, quels sont les styles qui sont dans la collection, etc., les différents courants. C'est un peu ça le lien entre les modules e-learning, mais en même temps, les modules e-learning sont une façon de découvrir la collection. C'est-à-dire que c'est un peu une façon d'expliquer la collection. Parce que souvent, si on a 3000 pièces, qu'est-ce qu'on fait avec ça? C'est un peu le problème qu'on avait avec Sonus. C'est-à-dire qu'on a beaucoup de pièces dans Sonus, mais quand les gens arrivent dans Sonus, qu'est-ce qu'ils écoutent? Ils font une recherche pour un compositeur, mais ça les aide pas énormément. Ils trouvent 50 pièces qui s'appellent avec un certain titre. C'est difficile à écouter quelque chose. Alors que si on a des modules qui sont déjà préparés, qui expliquent un peu une collection ou qui expliquent des courants, c'est plus facile pour que les gens qui ne sont pas forcément des spécialistes du domaine. C'est ça, l'e-learning.
Okay, renvoyer ensuite
absolument,
à la collection.
Absolument, bien sûr. Il y a des liens.
La collection existe comme telle.
Oui.
Bah, elle utilise de façon fondamentale.
Quelqu'un peut aller directement à la collection.
Ah, oui, oui.
C'est ça.
Ah, oui.
L'e-learning est un peu comme.
C'est un point d'entrée très focalisé sur certains points. Soit une perspective ou un point d'entrée sur la technique de l'époque ou sur une certaine époque, simplement.
Mais on est conscient que c'est quand même pas complet, c'est pas représentatif de toute la musique électroacoustique. C'est que le e-learning vient mettre en valeur les composants de la collection.
C'est ça, oui, absolument.
Ben, elle parle, forcément, les modules vont parler de l'électroacoustique de façon générale, parce que toutes les approches à l'électroacoustique ou tous les intérêts se trouvent dans la collection jusqu'à un certain.
Avec des exemples qui proviennent de la collection, c'est ça. C'est-à-dire que les liens vont être les exemples eux-mêmes, les exemples, les morceaux.
Il faut dire aussi que c'est pas un projet qui est, puisque c'est un projet soutenu par la patrimoine canadienne, il ne s'agit pas de faire des cours d'électroacoustique. Il s'agit de mettre en valeur la collection. C'est vraiment ça, c'est ça le mot important, c'est que c'est la collection qu'il faut mettre en valeur dans ce projet-là. Et on fait ça avec un composant éducationnel. Il y a un composant simplement de rendre ces pièces disponibles au public général. Donc ça, c'est la partie Sonus. N'importe qui peut aller directement dans Sonus sans passer par les modules et écouter n'importe laquelle pièce. Il y aurait une référence vers les modules référés dans le e-learning module 4 sur tel point. On peut aussi les accéder à travers e-contact. Il y a un numéro spécial qui couvre le projet de façon générale et qui va expliquer tous ces liens-là aussi. Donc, on aurait la possibilité d'accéder à la collection à travers e-contact, à travers Sonus, à travers les modules e-learning. Donc, chaque grand composant est jusqu'à un certain point indépendant, mais tout est
interrelié.
Ouais.
The idea that's an important point, because it's almost as if the project is occurring one or two years too soon. The community has begun to develop sets of not agreed upon but criteria for categorizing particular kinds of work. And in the last couple of issues of eContact, I've been doing these things called quick picks, which is just going through the collection and putting in keywords to describe the pieces which are there. And people are coming forward. I take this on my classes. My classes listen to pieces, and they write down 5 words to describe the piece. And so slowly, kinds of categorizations begin to evolve. There's the soundscape. There's the pure soundscape. There's the processed soundscape. There's the modified processed soundscape. Then you move into acousmatic. And the acousmatic is the exploration of the object, and then the objectification of the object and the abstraction of the object. And when you get to the abstraction of the object, you begin moving a little further along. And as you get through particular kinds of granulation, the object ceases to be the focus of the composition. It just happens to be part of what the background information was in providing this. And you keep moving along and further and further, and you get towards max MSP processing of signals, algorithmic processing, and then the creation of abstract signals and the processing of abstract signals towards a more and more and more abstract kind of concept, until you move out to a kind of an extreme land, which I will call the land of DXtures, which is a double pun, because these kind of DX7 improvisations, which I worked on in the 80s, were just about the sound of processing the DX7 algorithms. And so slowly the field begins to move out, and we begin to see that there's a continuum that runs from just the microphone as a way of picking up sound and storing that out to really abstract kinds of ideas. And then there are multiple branches to this, because just alone within the idea of having the microphone pick up the sound, it's possible to consider that one of these things is the voice. And the voice can either be the voice as a sound itself, as a sound source, or the voice could have text. And therefore, the idea, each of these general categories and general areas begins to expand into a much more two-dimensional database of the general idea of a microphone picking up sound and a documentary recording to processed. And it's beginning to provide a larger mapping of what happens when sound comes out of a loudspeaker. The idea of electroacoustics being what comes out of a loudspeaker, sometimes debated and sometimes I don't know what the situation is, but I've, for myself and my thinking about this and going through the collection, is that people will listen to a piece and they'll say, oh, that's a soundscape, or that's a modified soundscape, or what do you listen to in the modified soundscape? You listen to Prochaine Station, which is a straight soundscape of Metro, and then you listen to Gilles Gourbet and you find that you have the same sound reversed. It's been moved to an abstract idea, so that in the production of the learning modules, effectively, it's a way of teaching about vocabulary and an academic approach. I'll be an academic for now. It's a way of teaching about how people will listen to these things within the sense of using their mind to listen to sound, rather than purely the psychometric emotional response to the sound. Because education is about using the mind to reprocess information. Dominic's work in the mastering requires that people come to understand things about acoustics, about equalization, about masking, about auditory scene analysis, about the technology of using 2496, technology of using high quality and so on. It's a matter of doing this, and part of one of the objectives of the CEC for a long time has been to raise the level of awareness among practitioners in the field, so that they cease just to be kind of children who are dabbling and become professional sound people who can articulate their ideas, and where the technology and the processing of the materials does not interfere with the conveying of the ideas that they have in their head. When the technology interferes with the production and the modification and processing of the ideas, then there's a block, and the block in the system is like a narrowed artery going to the brain. It's like having fat in the arteries.
To which extent does the catalogue que vous avez maintenant représente la musique électroacoustique des 30 dernières années?
The collection or the catalogue? The collection?
Ce qui sera le matériau consultable.
Moi, j'ai l'impression qu'il faut peut-être voir ça dans l'autre sens. Il faut se dire qu'on va faire une histoire de l'électroacoustique, on va en parler d'une histoire électroacoustique au Canada.
et on va utiliser des exemples de la collection pour illustrer cette histoire-là.
I'll answer your question. If you look at the number of works produced in Canada in the past 35 years, you can't count them, because if it came out of a loudspeaker, it's electroacoustic. And therefore, it's a matter of defining the limits. Glenn Gould's Idea of North is an electroacoustic composition. Right? If Idea of North is electroacoustic composition, so is every radio broadcast that ever occurred. It's just that the shift was between the importance of the word as a narrative and the importance of the word as an abstract narrative. So somewhere along the line, when you draw a line, the NASA events in Toronto are done by broadcasters, and their interests are the interests of communication studies people. They're sound poets who want to convey their word, and they find a sound effect to accompany it. And an example of the edge of this, for example, is Hildegard Westerkamp, who works the soundscape and the narrative text. And if you don't understand English, some of Hildegard's pieces don't make sense, because it's like listening to Epitaph für Aikiki Kubayama. If you don't know German, Aikiki Kubayama is a very interesting piece from Herbert von Eimert. But if you have German, the impact of the piece is much stronger. And part of this is to provide more people with more access to the range of the materials available. So I don't think it's a quantifiable amount in that sense. What we do have within the artistic domain is the collection, the Concordia collection, not just the works received. We have about 6,000 or 7,000 pieces in there, which include 1,200 CDs, which will be merged into the database because they are part of the collection. Many of them are published, many are self-published. We have, we'll have the complete Empreinte Digitale. We have the CDCM, the Consortium for the Distribution of Computer Music. The GRM, the old Philips, 130 LPs, about 90 of which were never re-released, of the old Philips, the silver LPs from the 1970s, the GRM series that were not re-released, individual pressings from York University in England, the four LP set, the Nonesuch Guide to Electronic Music, all of the switched on Bach kinds of things from the 1970s, they exist. They have disappeared from this. They will be part of the database. Whether we can get permission to have them is available. So it's there. This is not the strength here is that the project is opening a door about 15 degrees, the door that has to open 180 degrees over time. But the resources, both physical and intellectual, currently don't exist to do this. This the idea of discussion of languages of EA. Started in the 80s and kind of got, there was no worldview, there was no overarching view as to how to map the entire field. I think that this is changing, and every contribution to this is going to be significant. And the e-learning modules, as they're called, will just be a candle in this dark cave. I don't think they're not going to be searchlights. We don't have, in 2007, an adequately wide intellectual base of enough people in enough places who do this. The discussion of analysis of EA is a very rarefied field. It's a very rarefied, and if you speak to people who teach, they will tell you how difficult it is. They can do descriptions, but can they do analysis? Well, what is analysis? Analysis is description with a story. When I lie on my psychiatrist's couch, I tell him my story and I say what I think it means. And so we listen to pieces in class and we try and do a description. It used to be of a certain nature, and now there are 7, 8, 9, 10, 12 ways of doing these descriptions. And at some point in the next n number of years, we may have a Jean-Philippe Rameau who emerges and says, "Oh, look, we have all of this, and you have triads here." And Bach said, "I didn't write triads; I wrote figured bass." And Rameau said, "No, you wrote triads. Look." And people may not have liked the Traité d'Harmonie of 1734, 1737, but it formed the next generation of information in the generation of the tonal language, the tonal system. And you find that while Beethoven studied counterpoint, but not with Haydn because Haydn wanted to teach him composition, he studied the technique of counterpoint in the Fuchs, and then the 19th century composers learned harmony through the use of numbers for naming chords. And then Schenker came along and he oversaw this whole thing and saw that this past 300 years of music was based upon certain kinds of underlying principles. We're at the very early stages of talking about the range from abstract sounds to the documentation of sounds with a microphone. My voice right now is electroacoustic, and it's not being abstracted. The text is more important than the fact that the loudspeaker cone is moving. And these modules are going to provide points of light inside this enormous cave, and over time, at some point in the next 2 years or 10 years or who knows when, this cave will become illuminated, and this light will assist others who want to communicate to other people through sound, through the simple process of having two vibrating eardrums on the side of a head, or even one vibrating eardrum that creates images in people's heads. I know that it sounds very abstract and artsy-fartsy and fair, but I can give you specific detail. The past 15 years, I've done the analysis of maybe 300 or 400 pieces, and I do this on a regular basis. For the quick picks, I listen to the piece, and most of them I can get categorizations for in 20 seconds of listening to them, because people are working in particular kinds of ways. They may not know that it's that way, but it's possible to listen to them. And I think that out of this project, with a large number of people who are working on these E ideas, they will go to other people, they'll have discussions, and they will begin to form small pools of light in the field. And there'll be the connection, as I said before, about typing the word sneeze, 1987. That's down the road, because that requires people to sit and go through the piece and go, 4 minutes, 18 seconds, put the marker in the sound file, and then up it will come. But I remember when concert programs were done by my sitting on the floor with an IBM Selectric typewriter, typing and then gluing the notes onto a page to be Xeroxed, and today it's click, click, like that. I'm really pleased with what's happening, but I think we have to go.
Yeah,
right?
There's
a question.
There is a comment from David Ogborn on Skype. He think it would be good to have the CAP be very publicly visible on the web, even now, with updates on the current status of the work. This might also assist in getting the cooperation of others, other university archives, CEE, music gallery.
We are the CEC was blessed with a cornucopia of things this year, and they both occurred about the same time on top of each other. The archiving project occurred, as Jeff mentioned. The information came on July the 3rd of this year with the start date of April the 1st. So we've had to compress what should be a 3-year project into 9 months. And this makes communication and the filtering of this and the exporting of this information difficult. We're trying. Once Dominic has come back from his cross-country tour, basking in the beautiful rays of downtown Edmonton and talking in the bars with the hockey players out there, and rubbing shoulders with the oil executives, he will continue working on the transfer of the tapes, and Jeff will be able to work much more on finding the lists of. I think there are between 250 and 400 people we have to find. And finding John Wilson from 1986, who composed a piece, is not going to be easy if John Wilson disappeared from the field 19 years ago. So there's a lot of other kind of background work to do. But I think updates.
We've been trying to find some time to do this, but we have an overhaul of the front end of the CEC's website planned as well. We already have some ideas, and it's simply a question of getting a bit of time. And a lot of the we'll have right on the front page basic information on current projects and this sort of thing, because the way it is right now, it's sort of a fixed menu, and then you have to find your way through these menus and get to the different sections of the site. So we're aiming to make this a much more transparent interface. That's planned. It's coming, so that would solve that problem as well, making the information more easily accessible directly from the CEC's website.
It there's just so much going on simultaneously that it's, and there are two people who are working. They work full time, but they're paid part time to do this, and that's, we don't want them to burn out because we can't afford to have them burn out. Therefore, we have to offload some of the work and many of the responsibilities from them, so they make sure the system in general is working and functioning.
Any other questions?
Y a-t-il d'autres questions?
Est-ce que c'était c'est plus clair, Hélène?
You can. It'll be an ongoing discussion. We can get you more. Okay. I think. Are there any questions from? No. I think I'm going to ask if there's no further business. A call. A move to adjourn. Don't all vote. Oh, they've just all gone out the door. Okay. Thank you very much. It's what time?
16h46.
16:45. Quarter to five. Eastern Daylight Standard Time. Eastern Daylight Savings Time. Montreal, October 14th, 2007. Thank you very much. Goodbye.